Now, one of the reasons for why I wanted to talk to you, Dr. Michelle Maloney, is because there is a great deal of concern about what's happening in the world, in the environment, and there is a really strong hold on the world economy by people who are extractivist and who want perpetual war. Now, this is a fraught scenario, and it's just a lovely idea that your organisation, the Australian Earth Laws Alliance, actually sees a completely different paradigm. Could you talk to my listeners about this?
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the easiest ways to explain who we are and what we do is to come to one of the early theories that inspired our work. So there's a deep ecologist, a gentleman from the Western tradition, Thomas Berry. Many people know of his deep ecology work, but he also wrote a book called The Great Work, Our Way into the Future. And in that book, he actually explores what he calls the underpinning structures of our current governance system, meaning that which has emerged from Western thinking. And in this theory of his, he says that the underpinning structures of our governance system, looking at law, economics, education, and religion, are all so profoundly anthropocentric or human-centered that it's forged the way that we think and act and interact with the living world, and has done for, I would suggest, thousands of years. So, Earth jurisprudence is this idea that he talks about, this idea that we've reached a point where we've caused such devastation on the earth that those of us, particularly in Western globalized countries, should be taking responsibility for rethinking those very governance systems. So, the organization that myself and others co-founded in 2012, the Australian Earth Laws Alliance, or AELA, really formed up around this idea that we need to change our legal system, our economic system, and all of these underpinning systems. So, through that lens, and then really connecting to Australian ways of thinking. So, here in Australia, if we want to critique these underpinning structures of modern society, we also have to look at the impact of the British Empire when it came to this continent on the pre-existing peoples, the first peoples of the continent. So AELA and my work is really interested in this critique. How do we help people understand that the way we are now, it hasn't been the way we've always been, and it doesn't have to be the way into the future? And how can we, in as best positive way as possible, show people that much of the work they're already doing is part of the solution, and that there's also other ways to really look at our system, rethink what we're doing, and change what we're doing, sort of transition by design. And it's holistic. It's not just looking at climate breakdown, it's also looking at biodiversity loss. But it's also a lot of our work is based on love. It's really, we do, most of us love the living world. Even if you wouldn't classify yourself as an environmentalist, you'd probably choose on weekends to swim at the beach or go for a bushwalk or do something occasionally in the living world. And it's that love, that connection of place that we need to nurture and support, and then from it work back out and rebuild our thinking and our society. And again, in the Australian context, we are lucky enough to live on this continent with people who are part of the oldest continuous culture on earth. And their governance systems, which I've been learning a lot about by working with Indigenous elders like Mary Graham, is quite remarkable. And for people of the Western tradition like myself, to really see examples of just completely different ways of organizing ourselves, it's quite interesting and really inspiring. Doesn't mean we have to be like other cultures. Here in Australia, we've got an opportunity to build the best out of all of our ideas, I guess, and try to fit ourselves into this beautiful place and not try to be anything else for any other country. So.
Well, you know, it's actually very tough to do this because it's about changing the culture you live in. I mean, when you just were speaking then, I was thinking about how there's a whole lot in the city, there's a whole lot of artificial grass because it's so containable. But when it's really warm in the city, people seek out the tiniest, smallest patches of real grass.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's so many examples of actually interesting. An Indigenous elder the other day said to me, right thinking, wrong thinking. And it's actually reflected in Tyson Yunkaporta's latest book, Wrong Story, Right Story. This idea that deep down, we kind of know who we are, and once a lot of the information is more available to us, we get it. But how do we make that change? And simple examples of what we're doing in places that really don't make any sense and don't support life, are things like fake grass because it's easy to manage, crazy imported lawns across our suburban communities when people like myself kind of tear up the grass and start planting local plants and flowers and pretty things so that instead of spending money getting pesticides to kill the grubs that come up and eat your precious grass, why don't you actually nurture all the life there and support biodiversity? And not only that, it's beautiful and you get to enjoy creatures visiting your yard. So it really is simple ways, but also then joining up that systemic underpinning way that our society has emerged over 2,000 years. And someone whose original training was in a law degree, and history too. I'm very interested in where ideas come from and why we do things the way we do, and how do we unpick some of it and restitch it in a way that might make more sense to sustain life. So yeah, I like that, the fake grass idea of humans being in control of their environment. It's a bit tragic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But also, just on to take an oblique look, I'm reading some books, fairly light books, but they're interesting books because they're set in England in 1381. And one of the things that's so compelling about it is how repulsive and complicated their penal system was in hurting people. They had really complicated, very cruel methods of hurting people, and a great deal of disparity between the wealthy and the poor.
Oh,
And
incredibly so.
yeah, and I imagined this idea. Wouldn't it be interesting if the Pacific Islanders and the Australian people came and took over England instead of the other way around? How different it would be. But of course, they never would have.
No, that and look, this, you've just touched on a few points that are dear to my heart. Number one, the history of the English societal structures, the invasions, the legal systems that emerged from it. I'm actually researching a lot of that at the moment for a book that I'm working on with Indigenous elder Mary Graham. But also that punishment idea. So certainly, let's be honest, the ideas of crime and punishment, the ideas of political prisoners, the ideas of injustice and hierarchy, this is what built modern Australia. People know this, but we were identified as a sort of geostrategic place, but also somewhere for the Brits to take folks they didn't want in their own country anymore. I myself am a descendant of some of those folks who, stole a horse or stole some bread. And interestingly, just to go off on a cheerful tangent, I'm actually reading Watkins Tench, 1788. Watkins Tench is one of the Marines who came over with the First Fleet and is recognized as one of the more compassionate British folk who came to this country with curiosity instead of just sheer. But even so, even in the first couple of chapters, I was horrified by their attitudes towards nature, but also just their attitudes towards each other. One of the convicts stole some stuff, so they executed him. I mean, in a time when they were facing starvation and they needed every hand on deck, their attitudes meant they would still kill somebody for stealing. It makes no sense at all. And it links to, again, Mary Graham, who's a dear friend, and we're working on this book together. One of our first meetings when we sat down together and started to talk about how we might write together, what she said was, "Yeah, my people have been watching your people for some time." And it was a reminder that the cruelty of our people against each other, let alone what we then did to others, was something that set people aback and went, why are they doing that to each other?
Yeah, it's
Why are
astounding, isn't it? It's a psychological dilemma. Like, a Western culture really needs to lie on the couch. But anyway, it leads us to why your organization exists, and also you're obviously invested in the concept of education.
Yeah, absolutely. So firstly, so I've mentioned what the sort of one of the theoretical inspirations for our work is, which is how do we restructure our society so they can be earth-centered? And by that, we mean how can we ensure that human beings can thrive and survive and feel good whilst also supporting nature rather than wrecking the joint? So education is a really important part of that, of course, because we love to help people who are interested in learning more about what ecocentrism is, but also how do they How do we all work together to unpick, understand where we came from, why our systems are the way they are? And perhaps, if I could say anything, one thing we really love to do, and I think we're good at, is helping people really have that aha moment where we kind of call out the obvious. We show them what property law means in Australian society and why things are the way they are and where these attitudes came from. So education's really important to us. We often say that our sort of stated goal or mission in life is to increase the understanding and practical implementation of earth-centered or life-centered governance, with systems change across law, economics. So the increasing of understanding is the education side. And then the practical implementation is we work with lots of small community groups who are really trying to rethink what does community governance look like for ecological health? How do they understand and handle a very top-down legal system that we've inherited? So all of that education interest turns up as lots of webinars. We do a lot of free webinars. But yeah, one of the reasons you reached out, which I'm excited to talk about, is this year we're running two of our courses. One is called Introduction to Earth Laws. And the second one, which will be held a bit later in the year, is Earth-Centered Futures. So the IEL, or the Introduction to Earth Laws, isn't just for lawyers. It's a 4-week course held with live classes on a Tuesday arvo from 4 to 6 Queensland time, but also recorded, so anyone else who wants to have a listen. And it's really an introduction to earth jurisprudence, this idea of looking at our governance and what is the role of law or governance or rules in our society? Why are they so important? You know, how do they shape our entire society, our entire culture, and play into culture? And then a little bit of a peek at some of the Western concepts of property and control and hierarchy and how our legal system in Australia works. And then the rest of it, we look at really interesting ideas like rights of nature, legal personhood for nature, why people are advocating for ecocide. And one of our 4 classes is on Indigenous perspectives of law and some beautiful insights from amazing Indigenous writers, and guest speaker Mary Graham will talk about that sort of the Aboriginal philosophy, which is so very different. And yeah, many aspects of it would absolutely enrich Australian society if people understood what the relationist ethos and what caring for country is all about. So that first course, not just for lawyers, but lawyers and law students do occasionally join. But normally we just have a very general audience. We have small classes, maybe 30 people on average. We do it all online, and it's all super friendly and fun and an easy platform to access readings and videos. So it should be another fun year for the courses, I hope.
So over the time that you've been doing this, because you've been here for since 2012, have you seen changes in attitudes? Have you seen some sort
Yes,
of movement?
absolutely. We often talk about rights of nature as a spearhead concept, meaning it seems to carve open an awareness among people. And there's been a profound change in people's understandings of this concept. So very quickly, in our Western culture, and particularly in our law and economics, we look out across a landscape and see it as property. You know, this area might be fenced. It might have had a rainforest and they've cut all the trees down. And we don't question any of that, the fencing, the land clearing, the
Well,
change.
as it was said to me as a kid, because I was brought up in a dairy area, a farmer looks at a tree and he/she calculates how many fence posts they can get out of it.
That's exactly right. And that is very much the Western tradition. Whereas what we look at, what we're interested in, and what I've seen change in is people understanding that not only is the environment something that we should protect, but actually the environment, which is itself a very difficult term, the rest of the living world has an inherent right to exist with or without human beings being around. And it's called intrinsic value. And ecocentrism isn't new. You know, we've had wonderful deep ecologists talking and writing about this in the Western tradition for probably 80 years. But the difference in Western society is it's so entrenched. You know, you literally cannot live anywhere in a house, in a caravan, in a flat, without engaging in the private property system. So what we have seen, stories of optimism for change, a massive increase in people being interested in ecocentric and intrinsic value systems. And certainly over the last 20 years, I've been working in sustainability and environmental issues for about 35 years. The last 20 years have seen a massive rise in people genuinely interested in rethinking the system, but also in Australia, really getting to know what Aboriginal people's worldviews are, what some of their traditional laws were and are, and what could our society look like if we rethink the rules we live by and change the practice, change how we care for things and look after things. So I've certainly seen in our 10 years a remarkable awakening amongst many people that environmental issues aren't just one thing at a time. We need that systemic, holistic change. Certainly, I feel a lot of optimism when I see the sheer number of students, academic writers, and other researchers looking at earth-centered concepts, rights of nature, legal personhood for rivers. So there's a real interest in it. In terms of practical change on the ground, that's going to take a little longer. The very nature of our legal system is very stable and conservative in the terms of it's hard to change our system. That doesn't mean it won't change. Climate change is forcing everyone to think, not just one campaign at a time, but what do we do to change our society and how do we rethink what we're doing to the living world? So I think there's been positive change. It is particularly hard in Australia because our governments are so locked into fossil fuels and corporate control of resources. By its nature, our legal system is not super friendly or welcoming for local communities to protect places. They continue to have to fight to do that.
You've connected the thing that's most important, which is the law, which is really hand in hand with economics, because
Yep.
the law allows the economic framework to just beaver along as it prefers to do.
Well, I
And
would
it's
go further than that. I'd go further. I mean, I think a lot of people think that if you change the law, you'll change society. And although I have a background as a
no, it's
lawyer,
the other way around.
it's not, yeah, it's a bit of both because our laws have emerged through the British legal system to protect the things we value. And because it was hierarchical, because from a very early times, through the Anglo-Saxon emergence in the 700s, 800s, they have wanted to protect elite control of land. That's why feudal systems were so powerful and people assumed they were normal. To come back to your core issue, the world is changing. There are things we are doing and things that everyone can do. And attitudes in many, many areas are so much better than they used to be. But changing our legal and governance system is the true systems change. It's not just changing one law here or one law there, although even that would be good. It's really understanding that our legal system reflects our values and it reflects the economic power of the elite. In Australia, that's governments and corporations. Corporations have a huge amount of power through their lobbying, through their influence, through their friendships, through their consulting revolving doors. And fundamentally, our legal system right this moment is geared to support extractivism and growth. And you're the weirdo on the outside if you're seen to be trying to challenge that and protect the living world against so-called economic development. So destroying a forest and turning it into something else, preferably lots of real estate or housing and selling it in ridiculous prices is still favored in our society. So it's hard
Well,
to make change, but it is possible.
local Indigenous communities in Australia were the poster child for sustainability. It's quite clear because they wouldn't have been able to maintain the environment that they had at such a high level before European
And
invasion.
themselves, Europeans who came over noted. I mean, many of them wrote in a derogatory fashion because they could only see the world through their sort of puritanical British lens. But they recognized eventually that they were incredibly healthy people. They had healthy lifestyles. They're in better shape than our poor convicts carted over on boats. But yeah, I'm a huge admirer of the governance system and the cultural system and the deep, deep connectedness and the spiritual connection that Aboriginal people nurtured and supported and really built their entire societies upon. And the more you dig down into that, the more you can't help thinking, gee, what if we could do that in Australia? What if we had an ecological society that supported life, the human beings in it, and everything around us, and the uniqueness of our bioregions? That's another thing we're really passionate about, is really turning the legal system on its head and saying, what if we had greater community-based governance to care for places and to fend off the kinds of corporate invasion that still happens when outsiders come to a place, wreck the joint, And then everyone else is left fixing it up, managing soil, trying to clean up water, repair themselves after fracking, if that's even possible. So it's that governance structure, the belief system, and ultimately more people who rely on local places having a greater say. Because no matter what you think about your neighbours, most people don't want their local water supplies contaminated or destroyed. Even if we have different views, we nearly all share the need to live, breathe, and eat. And those things can be protected if we structure ourselves a little differently.
Well, I'm glad that you're on the case, and others are as well, because in the 1970s, I remember hearing a broadcast when I lived in the country and I was a young kid, that Australia was considered to be the quarry of the world, the
The quarry and the farm, yes.
yeah, and now it's supposed to be the place where they dump all their waste.
Well, and we're still, unfortunately, a quarry. The propaganda in this country about the importance of mining is still really profound. But I love the work of people like Richard Dennis at the Australia Institute, who are constantly unpacking how much money they really bring into Australia. And I don't know if you caught it, but just a week or two ago, he was at the press club, and their new statistic is our young people paying tax on their, or a fee on their education, are actually
Education, yeah.
contributing more to our tax system than the fossil fuel industry is paying in taxes. Now, that's a horrific piece of information, but it just shows we have a political and legal and economic system that says and values, oh, let's just dig a big hole and sell those minerals to other people so we can make money. Well,
Well,
imagine if our values were different.
10 people can make money.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. With our sister organization, the New Economy Network, which AILA supported and built, and is now doing other great things across Australia, that's what we always say, follow the money. If you look at what a community needs to provision for itself, it's going to look at ecological health first and food and water and safety and fun. And it's only when we have these outsiders coming in that want to take stuff without any benefit to local people, even local shareholders. It's a little bit crazy when you lay it on the table like that, like, hey, we're going to cut down this entire area. A company that's owned by foreign folks will come in and build hideous housing where no space for wildlife or biodiversity or trees, no habitat. And then all the people in those houses are going to be miserable because they can't afford to pay the mortgage and they've got no community connection or support because we've built them in a way that's disconnected. That's where you see systems. What if we built our communities differently? There was more life, but also more fun and more connection for humans. Many of us believe that these ideas are actually better for everyone and everything. So there's definitely an optimism, despite the powers of climate change heading our way in scary ways. And perhaps that's the whole point. We have to move much faster than we have been.